Anna Maria, and welcome to Animals as Messengers. And we've got this bonus class today where we're going to be talking about nature spirits and elementals as messengers. So exciting, and really a new topic for a lot of folks too. So I'm so glad to have you here, and I'm absolutely delighted to introduce and share Lynn Chown with you as she tells us about the devas. Now, devas function as the positive animating life in all matter. They're the builders of form and transmitters of prana, that life force energy. Devas are the manifestors in our partnership of co-creation, and Lynn's deep connection with the devas and her unmatched knowledge about the devic realms will take you to another level of powerfully creating. You'll come to understand exactly what it means to align with nature for manifesting your heartfelt desires. Lynn supports heart-centered people to invite in the devas and work with their life animating power to infuse your creations with life force, meaning, magic, activity, and manifestation. Oh my goodness, Lynn, I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you, and I'm so excited to be here too. And I'd like to thank you, Anna Maria, for this whole series. It's been so interesting and enriching, and you're stretching our intuition, you know, tips and exercises and new ways of understanding even the shadow insects. Ooh. I know I walked away with a new and profound respect for spider and red ant.
Ooh, I know, it's so shifting, isn't it? And that's what's so beautiful then to share your work, because it goes right in there. We've already been stretched, you know, a little bit in thinking and shifting our perspective. And now we come into these creatures that have been really considered mythological on so many levels. And I know also that we've introduced some terms here that folks might be new to or might not really have a real understanding of. So I'm wondering if you would talk about yourself a little bit and how you became involved and connected with these nature spirits and elementals and the deva kingdom, really, because right there's three terms that I'm sure a lot of folks aren't really sure what they mean: the devas, the nature spirits, and the elementals.
Okay. Well, I'm just a passionate seeker of ageless wisdom and practical knowledge on how to make sense out of life and the universe and divine source and the goddess and the god spirit, all of that, you know, the energy patterns and how dense matter of our bodies gets animated. That was a big one for me. And I was blessed with a career as a stay-at-home mom, which allowed me to pursue all of these interests. You know, and while the kids were in school, I was reading and studying and meditating and practicing moving energy. You know, and I've been certified and attuned and ordained and recognized as teacher trainer, but through this whole journey, I've become more than just yesterday's vegetables. You know, just I'm more of a gestalt of the journey, and it's time for me to share, you know, share what I've learned. I've been blessed with all this time being able to gather this information. So now I'm a stay-at-home grandma, but, you know, I'm sharing. So with this 30 years of delving into the mysteries, I've run across references to devas and nature spirits in many ways. And it's throughout people's thoughts and perhaps their worship in oral traditions, in the ancient tomes and the religious books, you know, the Hindus, the Chinese, the Celtics, the North, American Indians, Aborigine, even Christianity has references to angels. So all of these religious books talk about them, but in their own way. And, you know, even my husband was appealing to the wood spirits for lucky lengths in his woodwork, and it was working. So it was so compelling, you know, just all the information was so compelling. And as energy follows thought, I was attracting them into my life without even realizing it. And just one day, I opened my eyes, and there they all were. They were surrounding me, you know, and they would be, like, snuggling my chest in my face. And, you know, they're just so loving and playful. They're just wonderful to have around. And I thought my main purpose in life was to help people realize as a soul that they're never alone. Mm-hmm. But now I've had to edit that to help people realize to live a life in a body on earth, they are a soul and they are a deva in a co-creative relationship, and that they're never alone. And so to explain more about the nature spirits and the elementals and the devas, there's many kingdoms in nature. There's the mineral, the plant, the animal kingdom, the human kingdom. There is also a deva kingdom. And nature spirits and elementals are part of the deva kingdom, and so are angels. And it's just a matter of how evolved the devas are. So the devas are just the shining ones, you know, that aspect. They're part as much a part of God as we are. As humans, you know, and we have this relationship with them. And so there's solids and liquids and gases in the physical dimension. There's also levels of ethers in the physical dimension. And they become more and more refined, you know, just like solid, liquid, gas, ether, refined ether, more refined ether, right? Mm-hmm. And so the nature spirits and the elementals live and move within the ethers. And nature spirits are... They're highly connected to nature, and they take care of the natural world, and they help with the processes of nature, and they help the world transition from one season to another in the divine cycle of life and birth and life and death and spirit, and they help with all of the nature's processes, with pollinization of flowers, germination of seeds, the maintenance to help a young plant grow into a mature plant. They help with the processes of water evaporation and rain and transmuting sunlight into warmth into warmth and food for plants. And they just help with the process of preparing for winter, you know, just, you know, pulling all the life force back in to the plants to prepare and, you know, withstand the cold of the winter. And so the fairies and the elementals, as all devas, evolve just like we do. They have their life. They have their life evolution and their progress. And they're eventually drawn into the heart of the goddess, which is more into their source, right? So each nature spirit and elemental, they have their own expertise, all of them. They all have their own. And all of them have the knowledge of alchemy, and they have transmutive abilities, and they love to play. They just love to play. So I would call them the little alchemists. You know, they're little builders, and the elementals are the lesser evolved of the devas, and then they kind of grow into more of the nature spirits, you know, the fairies and so forth, and then eventually managing devas, and then they get into more into the angels, you know, so they have their lesser evolved to the more evolved, just like we have our masters and so forth, you know, our enlightened masters.
That's fascinating. I'm just riveted listening. You know? It's like I can't even suck it in quick enough.
Oh, they are compelling. It's such a wonderful area to be able to study.
Yeah, it's like I know, you know, when you're in a fairy ring and you can kind of get drunk on that energy.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it's like. I've already had the first one, folks. I can feel it.
That's a wonderful analogy.
Oh, so I'm sure we're going to have lots of giggles during this time. Mm-hmm. So then I definitely don't want to cut you off, so I want you to pick up where you are at. And then I'm starting to wonder, you know, all these questions are formulating in my head. Plus, I can feel everybody else's questions coming in as well. So then where so you've mentioned like the fairies and even the elves. Those like mermaids, dragons, unicorns, where do those fall into, I guess, the categories?
Well, for the most part, they are the nature spirits.
Okay.
For the most part. The elves, it's questionable about the elves, although, see, fairy is an umbrella term for nature spirits. Often, throughout time, you know, it started as meaning one thing, and especially around the 1500s, you know, there was that period. But fairy is an umbrella term, and there's many different types of fairies. And often elves get thrown in with the fairies, but really elves are a little bit different, you know. And mermaids, I believe, are more into the fairy realm, as well as dragons and unicorns. But elves, I think, are a little bit separate. There's, you know, where they come from. You know, is it Celtic? Is it the Germanic or the Scandinavian? Or, you know, from Persia? Where these originated has a lot to do with how people think of them. And energy follows thought. You know, you give them a lot more life and a lot more energy when you're concentrating on them, and you just charge them up, you know, as what you need them to be.
Well, it's fascinating, too, because, you know, you talk about some of these other cultures that these creatures are really embedded, even woven into the fabric of everyday life. I think here in the West, it's definitely looked at like more of a fairy tale. It's not real. It's a metaphor. But you see in other cultures, even if they do it a little tongue-in-cheek, that there's a true belief that these forces are around us and helping us create and helping, you know, life be in motion.
Right, right, exactly.
So I think that's why we're so riveted by this, because it's not talk that we hear all the time. Even those of us on the path and, you know, the open minds, it's not something that, where do we go to find the information, you know? So we find someone like you and we glom on.
Yes, as I said, I was a stay-at-home mom, and I'll tell you, I was naming those dust bunnies, you know. I wasn't really diligent about some of the house cleaning. So I was reading. I couldn't stop. I would have been a professional student if I could have. You know?
Yeah. Well, and here it is, you know, that insatiable thirst that you had, something that was a passion for you, and now it shows how you get to use this in service to share everything that you've learned. And so, of course, you know, it seemed like such a perfect fit to me to bring this on as one of the topics that we talked about, since we're looking at the messages. I love it when I make up new words, the messages that come from, you know, the animal spirits, and so now to include the nature spirits and the elementals, I would love if you would kind of go through, you know, the mermaids, the dragons, the elves, fairies, unicorns, if there's others that I'm missing, which I'm sure I am, if you would kind of explain to us, like, what they are, what their main message is, and then how can we best connect with them? And I guess the other side of that would be, how can we know when they're bringing us messages, especially when these are new folks to most of us?
Right. Okay. Well, let me start by saying it isn't hard to invite them into your life. As you would call up your guides, your angels, all, you know, whoever it is that you rely on for your guidance. Just as you call them up, you go through your meditation, you get in your heart, you get grounded, you throw up your protection, and you connect to your higher self, and you just invite them, just like you invite your guides. And I want to stress the term invite, because this is not a forced thing. You can't demand. They won't come. So you have to invite them. Mind your manners, right? Mind your manners, invite them in, and, you know, and when you're finished, you thank them. You know, you send them, you know, your appreciation, your love. It's as easy as that. It really is. It's not, you don't have to make it complicated. They are there, and they love working with high vibrational people. So as long as you're not forcing your will on them or asking them to force your will on others, they're there, and they want to play.
Mm-hmm.
You need a pick-me-up, just call them in for snuggle or whatever it is that you need. They are there. Right?
Yeah.
They're all around you. Look at all around you. They're there. Anything. Anything that has a name, like a table, are made of elementals. They're there. You are a deva. Your body is a deva with a soul.
Wow.
Right? So it doesn't take much. All you do is invite them. Okay? So let's start with fairies, though, because it's an umbrella term, like I said, and it's very complex, you know, how many of them there are, right? So they say that the fairy realm dates back to 10,000-11,000 years,
mm-hmm.
and they're found all over the world in every culture and religions. They're all over the world. But most of what we know is depicted in paintings found in the Etruscan art about 600 BC or so, and fairies are associated mostly with like vegetation and the secrets of nature, and then around 400 BC the Celts were exposed to the Etruscans, and then they began their oral traditions, handing it down, all these stories and folklore from person to person, generation to generation. And so a lot of what we know comes from the Celts, you know, regarding the fairies. They brought the fairies more to life than just about any other culture. So fairies are, they're just beings of spirit, intimately connected with the soul of our planet. And they're able to direct energy straight from the source, from the Earth Goddess. And it manifests as Earth's spiritual heart, that energy, that's heart energy from the soul of the Earth. And fairies, you know, it's such an umbrella term. And they're just all over the Earth, every inch of the Earth. And it's comprised of form and don't reduce it to the Disney-ish, although it's fun to be there, you know, and you can interact with them probably easier and in a more friendly manner. But understand they are much more profound and expansive than the Disney image, right?
Well, speaking of Disney, also, it's almost like the rabbit hole, because it's like you're lured in and maybe your only image is Tinkerbell or whatever.
Right.
But then
right.
you come in and you start to play with them and you get to know them and you build this relationship, and it's that, like you said, the expansion that takes place and what you're able to see and interact with at that point is so much more profound. I know for myself, I don't have the labeling knowledge, you know, that you've come across and been able to really word. I just know what I see and what has interacted with me and what has made itself known to interact with other folks. So I'm just amazed all the time. It's like you turn another corner and there's this whole new world that opens up.
Yes. And you know, also with the sensing of them, they give a distinct sensation of spiritual intensity or a bliss or even like a clarity. It's like it lights up that space or whatever it is you're working with. There's a headiness about it. And they vibrate at a different rate than we do, but they're very close, you know, comparatively. And they can shift our energy field and open up our awareness of new realms, you know, and they live close to the human realm, but they're not quite part of it, right? We have a co-creative relationship with them, but they're not quite the same. And they use physical forms like we use clothing. And they move in and out of appearances for a variety of reasons. But, you know, they're known as fairy, the she, the shining ones, the little people, the wee people, you know. Mm-hmm. And being shapeshifters, they can change even their size, you know, as well as their appearance. And some of them are like hive. They're hive beings where... they're so close in their consciousness to one another, they almost act as one collective being. And there's the more solitary fairies who are more attached to a geographical area like a garden or a park or even a household, you know. So many of them align with the force of nature or the elements that they work with, say, if they work with trees, they might look tree-like. Or if they work with plants, they might look plant-like, you know. They work with butterflies, you might mistake them for a butterfly. And they'll express their preferences in style of clothing. If you're clairvoyant and able to see them, they could look like the old-fashioned Victorian, or they could be modern. You know, one of my guides is a modern-looking fairy with blue skin and kind of spiky red hair. You know, so it really, it's either they give you that appearance or you assume that they have that appearance. You know, depending on your clairvoyant ability. And so they might even give you, like, wings. I mean, really, they don't need wings to move around, but they'll give you the appearance of wings because maybe you expect it, or they may be telling you they're one of the air fairies, you know, earth, air, fire, and water, right, the elements. They're one of the air fairies because things of the air fly with wings, right? So it could be their preference, or it could be your way of making sense of it. Your brain is making sense of what you're seeing by putting wings on them, right? But the ones that work with the soul of the earth, they take on a luminescence that grows and diminishes according to circumstances or mood, like a mood ring, you know. So there are some that work very closely with the soul of the earth, okay. But there's thousands of varieties of fairies throughout the world, throughout the legends. And so I'll name just a few, right? And then so we can move on how to maybe work with them more.
Perfect.
But you start off with the lower evolutionary part of it, the elementals, or the building devas, and they're differentiated by their element, like earth, air, fire, and water. And the salamanders are the fire elementals, and you find them wherever there's like open fire or electricity or heat or warmth or any of that. And they speak of, as a messenger, they speak of creativity and spiritual insight, and also purification of everything that they come into contact with, because fire is a purifying element. Undines are water elementals, and you'll find them where in any phase or form of water or fluids. You know, like water, there's ice and there's steam and there's just drops of water, right? So any of those phases. And as messengers, they speak of emotions and all of their expressions, and also just purifying energy. And sylphs are the air elementals. You find them in any kind of gaseous state, mostly in the sky or with the clouds or breezes or storms or even the breath. You know, and as messengers, they speak of prana and of life. And they purify the atmosphere and they purify the mind. And gnomes, which is another generalized umbrella term, gnomes are earth elementals, and you'll find them, you know, flora and fauna of the earth. And as messengers, they speak of grounding and of purifying and maintaining life on earth. Okay, so those are the elementals. And the nature spirits do work within that realm also, so those messages work, say, with the cloud fairies, they're, you know, of the air, and they show themselves in formations of clouds, and they use the air and the water to sculpt these wonderful shapes for you to use your imagination. and you call on them, you know, just open your mind and your heart to invite the inspiration to come and to create. And there's many types of earth fairies, and they show themselves usually as little people, and they often wear greens and browns, and you'll see them near the base of a plant or within the leaves of a tree, or, you know, I mean, they work hard to maintain the well-being of creatures in all of the kingdoms, you know, earth, mineral, animal, all, even human. And as messengers, they speak of planting your feet firmly on the ground and to find the inner beauty that you hold inside of you, or perhaps in your creation, or whatever you're working with. Flower fairies are just beautiful creatures who love color and nature and just natural beauty and whimsy, and they're kind-hearted, and they'll bless. They'll bless you when you display gentle acts of kindness, because they're kind of a gentle folk, right? Mm-hmm. The dryads are known, they're known as tree spirits, and they look like wisps of light. And they're playful, and they like to sing and dance, and they may even lure you into the fairy realm, where you may even get lost or drunk. And as messengers and friends, they help you get in touch with your magical abilities and help you contact the divine goddess within you. Brownies are solitary fairies and are found in the soil, or working, like tilling the soil and working with the roots of plants and plants in general, you know. So you can even sometimes invite them into your home to have them bless you while you're doing your household chores. But mostly they're more of a garden helper, you know. They work with, like the plants outside mostly. Sprites are, in general, they're water spirits, and they're known for their ease and lightness of movement. Dobbies, or Dobbins, are household sprites that help with cleaning the chores.
Oh, mine are not working. Oh. Call on those guys.
Well, they remind you to be playful, but they will briefly hide things from you as well.
Okay, maybe they are here.
And the pixies remind you to be playful as well, but they might bewilder you or lead you astray, especially if you find a pixie path.
Ooh.
And leprechauns, they look like little old men. They're purported to be shoemakers, but they're mostly known for being tricksters and revealing the location of one of their crocks of gold to anyone who catches them. And the leprechaun's message is concerning greed.
Ooh.
Yeah, and so goblins have a nature that gives them a very simple view of the world, uncluttered by thought and consequences and responsibility. And it gives them a relaxed, uncaring view of all things, which often people take for slow wit and ignorance. But their message is to slow down and take it easy. And then a puka is a shape-shifting goblin. And they take the shape of a dark animal, especially a horse. And they've been known to offer rides to unsuspecting travelers. And it's often a very wild ride once they get aboard and take off. And the puka has the power of human speech. And they have been known to give advice and lead people away from danger. So those are, you know, some of the different types of fairies, which, you know, that whole umbrella thing, you know, the term of fairy.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, like, there were ones that I hadn't even heard of before, and then when you start talking about them, I'm like, oh, that's who they are.
Yeah.
Okay, I've played with them. I didn't know their name. So
there's thousands of different names for them, and, you know, in one culture they're called this, and the other
right.
culture they're called that. But, you know, those are some basic ones that we might be more familiar with.
Yeah,
or
and
run,
I think more
run,
often we don't even realize that there is a name, you know, that they would be called anything at all, you know, mainly because of our disconnect from all of these realms. But oh my gosh, I can't wait to hear what else you have for us, because I'm already like overflowing. I'm like, this is so awesome.
Yeah, and we're going to run out of time, so I'm going to try and move this along a little faster because I still have the elves and the dragons and the unicorns and
the juicy ones. Perfect.
Yeah. Okay, but the entrance to a fairy realm is through a door or a portal or something found like in a hollow tree, a well, a crossroads, a barrow mound. Or you might even find it on the fairy paths or the, you know, known in the West as ley lines. Mm. And the realm is easy to enter if you've been invited, which is rare, but many have found it by mistake and while others search for years and waste years of their life trying to get in there, you know. But time and space do not move in the same way as in the human realm. So one night in their realm is equal to several in ours. And, you know, you have to be careful of what you eat and drink. And the best way through is a spirit journey, like a similar to a shamanic spirit flight. That's the best and safest way to approach that. So if you're just interested in a fairy sighting, go to any place where there's little human activity, like a big state park or a forest, you know, like a campground. Sit in meditation or do a walking meditation down a path using a soft gaze. That's, you know, where you just shut your eyes and you relax your eyes. And then when you open them, you're not laser focused on anything. It's just a very wide gaze. And so use that wide gaze. Look in the trees, the plants, the skies, even birds and butterflies, because they'll ride along with birds and butterflies. Their energy, you might be able to see them or sense them. If you do not easily see into the etheric realm, use your senses for energy patterns and movements, right? If you'd like to entice a fairy friend into your garden, plant some plants and flowers that they like, foxglove and tulips and ferns. And they just love to play. So use bright colors, beautiful scents, you know, in your flowers, and attract wildlife to your area, like hang a bird seed feeder or a hummingbird feeder. You could build a little fairy house using twigs and leaves and stones, and perhaps, like, put a crystal in there for decoration. Mm. I know I would love that, right?
Right.
And like I said, my husband attracts those wood spirits, you know, the wood fairies, and he uses fence art to entice them. You know, he cuts a lot of different shapes into woods. And then what's left over, the negative area, you know, the background part of it, he tacks those up on the fence and calls it fence art.
I love it.
And he arranges, you know, tries to arrange them into a nice little pattern or whatever. But he's also very careful to thank them for the lucky lengths that he consistently gets. Mm. And as a warning, do not use iron. Fairies do not like iron, so whatever you do, no iron.
Do you know why that is that they don't like iron?
No, they work well with silver and gold and, you know, brass and all that other stuff. But iron, I don't know. And, you know, I really don't know. I didn't look into it because everything in our house is wood because of my husband, right? And
right.
So it just didn't come up for us. So I never
Well, because in that movie, I'm not going to say it right, Maleficent?
Maleficent.
That one, yeah. The iron was, you know, the only thing that could get to her, and it's what cut off her wings.
Right, and if you're looking at a portal to a realm, it has been known for people to use a rod of iron once they find it. They stick that iron through that portal to keep the portal open so that they can return easily. You know, so, it does have some kind of effect on them, but I really don't know what it is about iron, perhaps that it rusts. You know, I don't know.
Who knows? It's fascinating, though. Ooh,
yeah.
Keep going. Thank you.
Yeah. So if you'd like to attract a house fairy, like a Dobby or a Brownie, to bless your home or, you know, bring you good luck or, you know, just start with a clean house. No clutter, no mess, right? And, you know, and put out offerings for, you know, if you want the building and the maintenance, them to stay, you know, to build up a relationship and keep them coming back, maintaining a good relationship with them, use some natural and sweet foods, no processed foods, no preservatives, no meat, you know, no alcohol, any of that. You know, they love honey cakes and sweet butter and fruit. They'll not eat the physical food, but they'll take the essence that's within the food. Okay? So you end up with a dish of something, but the essence is, it will be gone. So when fairies show up in your life, you happen to be, perhaps you're in a fairy circle of mushrooms. You'll see a fairy circle of mushrooms or a fairy mound or fairy stones, and those are holes filled with stones. You'll happen upon them. You know, when fairies show up, you'll happen upon that. Or you'll see or hear their celebrations during a full moon or during their holidays, which occur in May and October and December. Or you may experience a time warp or a space warp, right? Or you'll see fairy fire, which is a misty phosphorescent light that's fluttering or floating through the night. Or things in your house appear and disappear. Or disappear and reappear, you know. But call on fairies when you need magic and enchantment or imagination and playfulness in your life, and you want to connect with nature or how the natural world works. Just call on them to be with you and help you through that. And if fairies are your power being, they aren't quite animals, so I'm going to say power being. Perhaps you practice nature-based spiritual traditions and religions, or you're just a playful person and like, you know, maybe even harmless pranks, because they do like harmless pranks. Yeah. So would you like to move on to elves or mermaids? Which one would you, do you have a preference?
Well, let's do elves. It kind of feels like it's in a similar kind of realm.
It is, yeah. So the elfin race is thought to be a very mysterious race from the beginning of time. Originally, originally was from the Germanic and the Scandinavian folklore. The Old Norse thought them to be minor nature and fertility gods or demigods. And the Icelandic folklores explain them as angels that sided with neither Lucifer nor God, so God banished them to earth instead of hell, like he banished the Luciferian folk, you know. And originally they had a refined spiritual body, and they lived in untouched places, and they were rarely seen, and it was hard to discern the male from the female, but both had that beautiful, fragile-looking face with high cheekbones. And as time rolled on, they moved to other places in the world, and they even lost their spiritual bodies and changed into beings of blood and flesh, descending from heaven to earth. So you can see this has a different feel, right?
Yeah.
So with this descent, the race split up between the light and the dark. And this created a duality or polarity within that race. So the elves of light were luminescent beings. They're more beautiful and brilliant than the sun, and they just loved the light and being in the light. And they just wore these garments of delicate and transparent textures, and the light elves were friendly with the human kingdom, but they preferred to be left alone. So they lived in like dense forests and wooded lake area type, you know, places. And they were sometimes singing, celebrating the blossoms in the spring or swimming with the undines in the summer, you know. So the light elves could help or hinder humans with their knowledge and magical powers, or even inspiration for art and music. And they were skillful healers. But their shadow aspect as the night elves could cause illness and death, you know. And the night elves had eyes that glowed in the night like fluorescent lights. And they were called Drows, D-R-O-W, Drows, right? And they lived underground and in caves, and they were ugly, and they had long noses, and they were dirty and evil. And they avoided the sun, because whenever sunbeams fell on them, they turned to stones. So night elves were said to sit on a person's chest and whisper bad things to haunt them in their dreams. And they also haunted animals, especially horses. And they were known to steal human babies and replace them with changelings. So that's their shadow. That's their dark, their duality, you know. So if the light and dark aspect comes up as a, you know, in the messenger, if they come to you as a messenger, and that light aspect is light-dark aspect is highlighted, look at the polarities in your life and balance them. You know, if light elves show up as messengers, get out into the sunshine and celebrate the blossoms and go swimming with the undines. But if the dark elves show up as a messenger, look at your relationships to others, you know, to animals, to nature. Are you being too intense or negative? Is there any aspect of you that needs to be brought out into the light of day? But going beyond this light-dark originally this split happening, but during the 1500s, around that period, people began incorporating the elf folk lore into stories and legends about fairies that blurred the distinction between the elves and the fairies. And although the elves and the fae appear to be similar, the fae are more of an immortal being linked to the flora and fauna of their homes and their areas, and they're guardians of the plant kingdom, whereas the elves are mortal beings who live very, very, very long lives, and they're just in tune with the natural world and with magic. So in the early legends and stories, elves were like a heavenly or otherworldly race, and they were bright and beautiful and wise. But when they came to live the earthly life, they grounded to nature and to earth, but they dropped into the duality that permeates the earth experience, right? So between heaven and hell, light and dark, good and evil. And this represents the soul's journey, really. The soul itself is a middle principle of nature. You know, the link between Creator and his world. The soul finds the middle way and becomes at one with nature, not only in form, but mastery of the flow of the divine energy. And standing as a magician manipulates the two with skill and creativity, becoming a bright and beautiful light that illumines, you know, the path for others with wisdom and empowerment and creativity. And I'm talking the soul's journey to the end, right?
Right.
So the elves are known to be wise and very attuned to nature and have several natural defenses against magical influences. And so they're well suited to wizardry and the magical, and they're like magical shapeshifters as well. And they have these big, expressive, star-like eyes and pointy ears, and which allows them to have a heightened sense of seeing and hearing. And their uncut hair and their open hair, you know, the way they wear their open hair acts like antenna to help sense their environment, right?
I love that.
So elves have mastered time, and they live these very long, long, long lives, and they're strong in spirit and body, and often take on youthful appearances. It's said as they age, they don't grow weaker. You know, they stay the same strength. So elves are also creative. They're skilled. They're known to be skilled artisans, especially with metals and woods and bone and ivory and leather. You know, think of Santa and his helpers, you know, that tradition, you know. And they're the creators of Thor's hammer and the sword Excalibur of the Lady in the Lake. They're very skilled artisans. Excuse me, I need to take a drink. So they have this creativeness to them. So and they're very complex, you know. When they show up as messengers, their message would be about whatever aspect of them is lit up. For instance, that light-dark thing, the soul journey piece, you know, the creativity piece, you know, they're very complex. So you need to, when they show up as a messenger, you need to understand what part of them is lit up, what aspect of them is lit up. So is your relationship with them about time? Is it about aging or youth? Is it your spiritual gifts or creativity or where you are on your soul's journey, right? So as a messenger, it would depend on what is lit up about the elves, what part of them. So when they show up, you know, look at your dream life. You know, is it taking a turn for good or for bad? Do you notice a change in the messages of your dreams? You know, is there a magical quality about your creative projects? You know, they could be showing up in ways like that. Or do you have a boost in your clairvoyance or clairaudience? You know, do you sense a need to change your lifestyle in order to lengthen your life? You know, look at those areas if you think they're showing up. So elves, they have an affinity for trees. So a good place to find them is in the wilderness, like in a dense forest or a wooded lake area, and call on them. You know, if you're attracted to the study or practice of nature magic or time magic or shape-shifting or talisman and ruin magic, call on them. You know, you feel that you're ready for the next step in your soul's journey and need to reestablish your connection with, like, heaven and earth, you know, that middle ground. Call on them to be there and walk you through with, you know, with you. And just even if you just want to feel beautiful and bright and elegant, you know, just call on them and they'll come.
I love that it's just, it's exactly how you said that. When we're ready to take that next step in going deeper, this is where this whole realm comes into play.
Yeah.
It's so exciting. Wow.
You want to go on to mermaid?
Yay, mermaid! I can hear the collective cheer on the mermaid. A crowd favorite.
Oh, I know. It is. Mermaids are, yet especially those attracted to water. Mm-hmm. So a mermaid is an undine. That's spelled, by the way, that's U-N-D-I-N-E, if you're looking to do some research on it. Undine. And the mermaid is from Neptune's realm. Mermaids are seen all over the globe, and her environment is the ocean, obviously, and it's a vast and beautiful world full of life, a world you can easily get lost in if you're unprepared. And the ocean is deep, and it's often dark and mysterious with powerful movements of the currents and the tides, the ebb and the flows, the push and the pull. You know, whereas some of the shores, they're filled with light and beautiful green, you know, like the Bahamas, you know, beautiful greens and blues and clear water with colorful life, but there is still a current with tides, right? Mm-hmm. So water is symbolic of emotions, and ocean water is all about the dramatic movement and the ever-changing, unrelenting push and pull of emotions. And a mermaid is in a liminal state of half fish and half human, liminal being in between this and that, right? So it's half fish, half human. And the fish half is about how to swim through our world of deep emotions and being able to dive into those dark spaces and return safely and mastering the push and the pull of our ever-changing moods. And the human half is naked, right? The being naked is about being unrestricted and unobstructed regarding who we are, being free to be at one with our environment, our emotions. And since our heart is housed in the torso, where the naked part is, it's about being at one with life and the universe and all that is. And although there are mermen, more often the mermaid is encountered, the female version, which adds to that piece about the bare breast. And this could add a nurturing or a sexual component to the meaning regarding the healing and the caregiving and the creativity, right?
Mm.
So when you have a creature that's half human and half animal, they reflect movement away from or toward the animal. They represent a change in consciousness. And in this case, being able to transmute and master those emotions, allowing one to use their intuition to guide them through life in a nurturing and creative way. So the mermaid is also known for her masterful voice and alluring song or expression. And this is a throat center activity. So her voice is magnificent, and it carries over long distances, while her song is beautiful, unforgettable, and it carries a promise of some sort of fulfillment. She's radiatory. In the kingdoms of nature, being radiatory is often a sign of being a master. So, but on the shadow side, though, her song is magnetic, and it's focused for the sailor's ears to hear, those who only navigate the surface emotions. So where mermaids are symbolic of the alluring female, sailors may be symbolic of the lonely masculine. Those who succumb to her call willingly dive into the ocean unprepared, and in their disparity, they're pulled into the depths and usually drown. So death really is about, it's another way of saying the end to one way of being and the beginning of another, which ties into that piece about that change in consciousness, right? So the way back is to transmute the deep and dark emotions to resurface a master. So the ultimate lesson is balance and harmony in your emotional life, really. It's like standing on the fulcrum of a teeter-totter, maneuvering that top middle place between the two ends, or even like surfing in the ocean. It's not just from a static place, the balance. It's not from a static place of being in the middle. It's from that dynamic position of continually having to adjust your position, your balance, your radiatory and magnetic actions, your currents and tides, your light and dark, masculine, feminine, all of the polarities pushing and pulling at you, and transmute all that doesn't serve you.
Well, and it becomes so apparent to me why we don't hear that much about any of these, really. Because it really is when you get to that point where you're willing to go deep, because just as the power that they have to help us and source us and inspire us is so huge, so are the remembrances that we have to go through and really the inner work that we're called to do when we're introduced to these
right.
realms.
As light workers, we do often have to delve into that dark, deep, dark place, those mysterious places. And if you're not prepared, you know, you can drown.
Right.
So what we envision and dream and see and hear in our outer world is a reflection of our inner world. And if you're not expressing yourself, or if you hear the mermaid song pushing and pulling in your depths, look for a dark space inside you where you've hidden something, you know, some emotional pattern, and bring it up into the light to be transmuted, and then radiate your magnificence in your song, right? And call on mermaid when you feel enmeshed or overwhelmed with emotion or depression or loneliness, and ask her to safely guide you through those deep, dark waters while you transmute that which doesn't serve you anymore. And call on her if you need to express yourself or be radiatory in a vocal way. You know, clairsentience and clairaudience often have mermaid as their guide or power, as a power being. and because of the radiatory and the hearing, you know, the throat and the hearing and all of that, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't she fun? Oh.
She is fun. She is fun. And again, there's so you're lured in by the beauty and the whimsy and the mysticalness, but then you get in there and I'm like, whoa, it's really grounded, you know, considering that it's watery, it's really grounded in there.
Okay, on to the dragon. A dragon,
yay,
very powerful. This is a power
I love dragon.
Very powerful. Mm. And technically it's a salamander or fire nature spirit because of the fire breathing, right? And there's sightings and stories and myths from all over the globe about dragons as well, and this is one of the bigger ones. In the East, he's snake-like, powerful, and wise, and he's one of the four guardians of the hidden realms on Earth and a guardian to the places beyond. In the West, he's lizard-like. He's protective and keeper of the treasure. In both, he is both destructive and creative with his fiery breath, and fire is known to have a purifying effect, and breath is life-giving. So you have the dragon claws to grip the earth. You have the scales to swim through the water, a crystal tooth to focus and exhale the fire, and wings to fly wherever it pleases. He's very powerful and very versatile, and he works with all of the elements. So you can see how he's a powerful being. And he's often found out in the open where he has a vast area to roam and be left alone. For instance, like the seas and the oceans or the skies or the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out working with the undines, the water nature spirits. His fiery breath heats up the water of the seas for the moisture to be evaporated up to the sky. And when he's working with the sky in the sky with the sylphs, or the air nature spirits, he's creating smoke or clouds for the evaporated water to cling to. The sylphs, and by the way, that's spelled, if people want to do research, S-Y-L-P-H-S, sylphs, okay?
Thank you for that, yeah.
Yes, the sylphs return the water in the clouds back to the earth in the form of rain, which is a fresh, life-giving, and creative possibilities, the rain. Helps with that. So in this aspect, dragons can control the climate and the weather. When he's working with the gnomes or the earth nature spirits, he uses his fiery breath to transmute rock back into molten lava, allowing the fresh lava to form new lands and allowing the gnomes to do their work with the gemstones and the precious metals. You know, brings it back to a state where the gnomes can create and transmute and do their work. So by using the destructive power of his breath, he aids the other nature spirits in their creative process. And in this aspect, dragons can control the primal creative energy. Right? So when dragons are not working, he's resting deep in the earth, near the core fire, the primal creative energy, near the gemstones and the metals, and near the treasures, you know, so that brings in that Western place, you know, where the dragon shows up, keeper of the treasures. And in this aspect, the dragon is symbolic of the sleeping kundalini energy with the root, you know, within the root chakra, his cave in the root chakra. Mm-hmm. And when dragon awakens and sends forth his fiery breath up the central channel, the fire burns the protective webbing. And that webbing covers the chakras, the energy centers of the body. And that webbing is there during the early stages of consciousness to protect the person, you know, to let them evolve and develop before that webbing comes off. And once the webbing is removed, it reveals the treasures of the chakras, the flowers at the heart of each of the chakras, and its specific energetic gift. And Awaken Kundalini is like the holy grail to spiritual seekers. It opens all the gifts of the clairs. It opens one, a person's senses to other realms and other dimensions. If you are if you're not prepared, that can be a scary thing, right?
Right.
So on the shadow side, with a premature Kundalini awakening, the unprepared will feel the dragon's destructive breath as a fiery hell in the spine, and that's tactile. You feel fire in the spine, There's a good chance you'd be booking a room at a local mental institution as well, because it would take you places, if you're not prepared, it will take you places that are just too much to bear. So that's the shadow side, working on the shadow side. So if dragon shows up in your life, you're emerging into a new phase or a cycle of your life, one with risks. And you may be vulnerable, yet you'll be well protected with dragon, as your friend, as your being. And if dragon shows up, get involved in activities that bring passion into life. That fire, a passion fire, and spend some time regularly in meditation, and you'll receive some valuable insights and inspirations if you do. The dragon shows up, definitely go into meditation. He's a power being, good place to be. Mm-hmm. Okay, and a good time to encounter a dragon is during a storm, especially if there's thunder and lightning. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to call on dragon, wait for the storm. And, if you do call on dragon, perhaps you're attracted to the study and the practice of any, the ancient mystical arts, or just even when you need wisdom and strength or spiritual power. He reminds you to draw upon and use the primal power, that primal creativity within us. So bring it out and give it expression, if that's where you're at. And call on dragon if areas of your life are static or no longer working, or the dragon's lesson is to let go of the status quo if it no longer serves you, right? So let the climate of your life and nature change and renew and just bring in this fresh, creative, and life-giving possibilities in your life, right? And then call on dragon if you're faced with obstacles in a project or business venture and you need to be a dragon to get through that. Mm-hmm. Or you just need to confront a person or a persona or a situation that just triggers a lot of fear in you, knowing that dragons at your back can make you give you more courage, right?
Absolutely.
So if dragon is your power animal or power being, perhaps you practice earth-based spirituality and mystical arts from Chinese Wicca, pagan, druidic, shamanistic traditions, that, or you're just even a contemporary wizard, right?
Right.
or you have a commanding presence and you carry yourself with dignity, or you just have a lot of enthusiasm and vitality. You have an open mind and are accepting of other people's spiritual paths and new ideas and possibilities. Dragon can be your power being, although everyone in life needs a dragon as a power being at some point, clairgnostics seem to have a special affinity for a dragon because he brings wisdom to the whole central channel, right? The Kundalini central channel of clearing, clairgnostics or claircognizance tend to have an affinity. And with the dragon, and I know it's not totally related, there's also the phoenix, that aspect of the fire, the phoenix. In Eastern traditions, dragon was married to the phoenix.
Oh.
Isn't that sweet?
That's fascinating.
And phoenix was also one of the four guardians of the hidden realms of Earth and to places beyond. But both dragon and phoenix have that purifying renewal energy. In the West, phoenix sacrificed itself to fire and, you know, and rose from its own ashes. In Egypt, the phoenix was linked to the worship of the sun god Ra, who died every night and was born again the next morning. And the phoenix is the symbol of the sun, of resurrection, of life after death. It's the symbol of immortal soul, of love and eternal youth. So both dragon and phoenix, they both destroy old forms. And the dragon destroys more of an outward form to clear the way for others to create, you know, where, you know, that whole transmuting the rock and, you know, and evaporation into the clouds, you know. So that's more of outward forms for others to create. Whereas the phoenix sacrifices her own form to rise and recreate herself anew. So if you're in a phase of crash and burn,
I'm giggling because I can hear the people resonating with that.
Yeah. But if you encounter a phoenix in that case, it can herald a time of a new beginning for you, a good time to encounter a phoenix is during sunrise or some sunset. So call on phoenix when you need to call forth a renewed effort and success in your own holy quest. You know, it's a time to rise up from your ashes of the past and become whom you dreamed of being with new energy at hand. Okay? So I just wanted to add that little bit about the
phoenix. Oh, I'm so glad you did. That was a really fun one.
Yeah, they are really
powerful, yeah.
Okay, do we have time for one more, the unicorn?
Yes, please. I couldn't. Okay. Oh, my goodness, my unicorn would be very upset with me for leaving it out again.
Okay, the unicorn is more of an earth nature spirit. It's a symbol of gentleness and purity and fertility. In the East, unicorn is also one of those four guardians. By the way, since I've mentioned three of them now, the fourth one is tortoise, and that's more of a grounding thing. But unicorn is also one of those guardians for the hidden realms. And unicorn can be found in green forests, and it works with the phoenix. And one of the phoenix's forms is the peacock. So in the form of a peacock, the phoenix guards the forest for the unicorn. And when you see one, you often see the other, meaning unicorn and peacock.
Oh, wow.
So the unicorn has the ability to heal, especially of a toxic nature. Its presence, it can awaken purity of heart. It can cure the loss of innocence and free the imagination. And the substance of a unicorn's horn, and I believe the substance and the horn is called an alicorn, alicorn. It provides protection against evil, and it has the ability to detect poison and counteract that poison's effect. When unicorn would drink from water, and when its horn touched the water would become so pure and fruitful, and all opposites would unite, and any females in the water would become pregnant. So unicorn holds the knowledge of the mysteries of sexuality, both physical and spiritual, and also of creativity. At their most tender moments, unicorns are extremely gentle, and some unicorns are said to walk so softly that they barely touch the ground and barely bend the grass. They want to do no harm. They just don't want to do harm to anything. So the unicorn reminds us to be gentle healers and not to force things. So if you want healing to be lasting, do it softly and gently, and trust in the strength of gentleness to heal and to bless. That's what a lovely message that is, isn't it?
Oh, I love that. And really one of those totems from my language to bring in when you are serving as a guardian of the earth. Like, what powerful medicine to bring in with you.
Right, right. In its shadow aspect, and pretty much everything does have a shadow aspect if it's within the earth realm, right? The shadow aspect of the unicorn is a fierce killer with great strength and stamina. And as a messenger, it reminds us to be fearless. Okay. So if unicorn shows up, pursue any creative, artistic interest or project that you've suppressed, right? And release your worries and put aside your responsibilities. Just play and have fun, like any of the fairy realm or any of these creatures. Play and have fun and suspend your disbelief and open yourself up to magic and support from the non-visible world, right? Call on unicorn when you're feeling an artistic pull but aren't sure what to do, what it is or what to do about it. Or if you're feeling toxic and need of healing, or you're caught in a rut or caught up in the mundane world, you know, the creative aspect to it and the healing, gentle healing. If you're just feeling disillusioned and want to recapture a sense of awe and magic, any, really, that's about any of these that we mentioned today. As far as the unicorn, call on unicorn, perhaps if your child has artistic gifts, especially if, because the unicorn has that purity and can cure loss of innocence and all of that, right? So if your child has artistic gifts or if they're just very sensitive or they sense things in the spirit world, call on unicorn. Or perhaps here's one, if you just want to get pregnant, call on unicorn.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
Take a bath.
Right?
Have the unicorn dip a horn in. Okay, so unicorn may be your power being if you're highly artistic or creative, or you're a healer, or you work with children, especially if they're highly sensitive children. You have an innocence and purity about your demeanor, or have a childlike awe and wonder, or you're just attuned to earth and care deeply about cleaning up the environment, especially poisons. Poisons. So how are we doing on time? Is that good?
That's amazing, Lynn. I'm like, you know me and my quest for knowledge and information, and you've definitely quenched that and brought in all these other aspects and realms, really, that even I hadn't considered or hadn't given a significant amount of consideration to. So I can only imagine what's happening on the other end for everyone listening in, and I'm grateful for the time that you've given us, and I'm wondering if you would have time for us to take just a couple of the questions that came in through the webcast.
Oh, that would be great. I'd love that.
Perfect. And then I also want to talk about ways that people can go deeper with you, because this is the thing. We start to explore this, and we're like, oh, my goodness, how can I go deeper? So we'll come back to that. Let's take a question from the queue first. We've got, we've got Cindy in New Jersey, and she says, hi, Anna Maria and Lynn. I've been waiting for this call. So I know mermaids and dragons are part of my tribe of spirit guides, and not that they're not enough and that I don't treasure them with my love, but who else do I have that's willing to assist me in general and to assist me with manifesting and sourcing my needs? Much love to the devas, elementals, and both of you. Oh, Cindy, that was so sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, it was sweet. Mermaids and dragons, wow.
I know,
two,
right?
Very deep, powerful beings. And if that's not enough, no, you know, that's fire and water, and both of them are purifiers, you know. And so transmuting the deep emotions and working with the primal creative energy, I mean, you can work with those beings. You can work with any of the nature spirits and the elemental. Remember that dragon is is so versatile, and it works with all of the nature spirits. So even just through the dragon, you have access to all of them, aside from the fact you can invite any of them in that you want, even if it's just for an hour or for one little project. It doesn't matter. You just invite whoever it is you want. You know, just invite them in. It's very so simple. Don't make it complicated. You need to understand the nature of what you want to work with. Say a project. You understand the nature of what it is that you're doing and call in that element. For instance, if you're looking to purify something, you would say call in dragon. If you're looking to work with emotions, deep emotions, it would be the mermaid. You know, the air spirits would be imagination. You know, the earth is grounding, and it's about life and prana, and just, you know, there's whatever, just understand what it is you want to work with. Just be prepared, and just call them in. And with you, I saw a red triangle shape, and it was spinning. You know, so that could be like the dragon's head. You know, it's kind of triangular a little bit. And it was spinning like the kundalini, the serpent dragon, how it spins, you know, coils up your spine.
Yeah.
So perhaps are you working with kundalini, or are you having an adjustment in your consciousness and your gifts in opening up the treasures of your chakras? Yeah, that's what I saw.
Ooh, that's awesome. Thank you for that. Okay, let's see. We've got Laura in La Plata, and she says, "Hi, Lynn and Ana Maria. Thank you for this call. Can you tell me how I can ask the devas helping me to build a relationship with the animals at home and to have a better understanding with any other animals, including the dragon I invite home? Thanks for your light. Much love."
How sweet that is to work with your animals. Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, so if you're coming from a pure and high vibrational place, all you have to do is ask. The devas love working with good high vibrational people. Just be heart-centered. Make your intention clear and ask. Invite them. And say thank you and send love. You know, manners go a long way. And working with your animal, the dragon is so powerful. It's versatile. It has access to anything you need. Just set the intention to work with your animals. If there's something specific that you want them to work with, then understand the nature of what you're asking, for instance, and have the dragon help you with that element. Just be heart-centered and be polite. you could even put out an offering. You know, an offering that they all love. The fact that you're putting something out for them acknowledges them. It tells them you appreciate them. And if you put out an offering that's appropriate, they're going to love you. You know, once again, put out natural stuff, sweet, fruit, vegetables, no preservatives, right?
Right.
Don't put out meat. Don't put out alcohol. You know, use common sense. You know, what essence would they like to absorb? You know, and then just working with animals. I mean, Ana Maria, you're better at answering for animals. You know, just inviting nature spirits to work with you. What a sweet thing to do. Oh,
I know,
God.
Right? It's so perfect. And I think that is that piece of that a lot of people are missing. You know, they're doing what they can from their own, but we're not really meant to do it on our own. We're meant to call in all these other realms. And so listening back through the different elementals, the different nature spirits that Lynn talked about, and see which ones resonate with you, because there's several that work with nature and animals and all of that. And so really just feeling your way in there and see which ones want to reveal themselves. It's such a super cool union to have those two together. Mm. Wow. Okay, so what I would love for you to do is, will you talk to us a little bit about your Manifesting with the Devas program that you do? Will you tell us what that is and how people are able to connect deeper with you, masterfully guiding them with the Devas?
Manifesting with the Devas is an energetic creative process. It uses the heart's very powerful electromagnetic field. And also the process, the Manifesting with the Devas, it works with our co-creative relationship with the building Devas. I specifically use the building Devas in this process. And we consciously create. Now, I mean, we're always, we have our wish life, and we're always turning our attention to this or that, but it isn't always conscious. How we go about creating and manifesting in our life. And this is a conscious way to do it. And it starts with your soul's desire. It starts with your soul, because you are a soul and you are a deva, and you have access to both. And to bring them together is all about that co-creative relationship, you know. So we attract, in this creative process, we attract the form-building devas from the ethers, and we invite them to use their animating power to imbue the creations with life force and meaning and activity. And we use the golden, universal golden grid in the ethers, and we use sound frequency. We use the wave and particle duality of the quantum theory. And we're just playing in the ethers. And we also engage a managing deva to oversee the creation. It's great fun. You know, you call in your magician archetype to wield your magic, and you play with the devas while you're manifesting your heart's desire. I mean, what could be better?
Right? Oh, my goodness. That's so exciting. And so we've got, if you're listening in on the webcast, we've got the button there. And you can purchase that program, that session with Lynn, and go deeper. And that includes a pre-consult as well about what it is that you're really wanting to call in. So it's really valuable as we're learning about these other realms and going deeper. So we wanted to make sure that you had that as a way to connect. And so, Lynn, you know, would you mind taking one more question?
Not at all. I'd love to.
Wonderful. Let's see what we've got here. We've got Lisa from Auburn, and it says, "Hi, Anna Maria and Lynn. Can you tell me anything about what elementals are around me and anything else you see? I feel very connected to my angels. What else can I do to get messages from the elementals?" Now, I know a lot of that you answered during the course content part, but specifically in here for Lisa, what are you getting?
I see some air elementals all around you, Lisa. And they're showing me some puffy moving clouds. So an exercise perhaps for you would, you know, go outside and lay down on the ground and, you know, ground yourself, get into your heart space, and look up at the clouds, you know, away from the sun, you know, once you're hurting your eyes. And then with a soft gaze, just open your eyes to the clouds and let your imagination open up. You know, let it roam. Don't read anything into it at first. Just let it play. You know, just be so open and receptive to what you're seeing. And have a journal or a sketchbook or a sketchpad nearby and start writing in, you know, journaling or sketching what messages you're getting. This is more of an outside activity, you know, and obviously you have to have some puffy clouds or something to focus your attention on. But it really, it's just being open to that air elemental, and just letting your imagination go. Just great activity for you, I'd think.
Oh, I love that insight. Thank you for that. There's been a lot of thank yous and a lot of excitement that has come in, and, you know, the comments of, I never realized there was so much to know. But here's a cute little share that Carolyn writes in, and she says, "Hello, lovely ladies. I just wanted to share that a couple nights ago my partner woke up and he said he'd been in fairyland where they'd partaken of butterscotch and jelly beans and danced up a storm."
Oh, no.
Isn't that awesome? She goes,
I wanted to share that. Oh, wow. So lucky. Wow. You know, you have to be invited in. I mean, unless you trip in there, you know, you have to be invited in. That's so fun. Lucky you.
Isn't that exciting? And how many of us wish that we had partners that had been, that are open to and go visit fairyland? How cool is that? Oh, my goodness. That is super fun. Carolyn, thank you for sharing that with us. So, Lynn, I want to thank you so much. Your depth of knowledge is just, it blows my mind on these realms that we just really, here in the West especially, have very little knowledge about. We just don't have a lot of places to go for this. And so to bring this in, especially in the context of being on our path and inviting the natural world in the form of animals and nature, and now we've got this whole new set of allies to call on. So I'm so grateful for you following your passion and now sharing everything that you've learned over the past 30 years. Thank you for the light that you be.
Oh, and you're welcome, and thank you for inviting me to share this. I just can't talk enough about this. Thank you for giving me the outlet for this. Thank you all for coming and listening too. Thank you so much. This is beautiful.
You're so welcome. So I invite everyone, that was a lot of information, for you to take the time maybe to even go sit outside and listen to the replay and really listen for those parts that sparked you and find out how you can go deeper, or go deeper with Lynn and find out how these beings in these unseen realms, for most of us at least, and how you can open up to see them more and incorporate their help and allowing them to be your allies. It's so exciting to learn and play in this energy and really open up to the possibilities. So whether you have a skeptical mind about it or whether you are just ready to go exploring, either way, be in gratitude that we've got this information to share with us and to help us go deeper. And absolutely landing in gratitude for this beautiful community and for all of the learning and opening that has taken place. And I wish you all well on your journey.